We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Coming up, the latest on the Kansas City Royals from our team here at KCSN. All of our Royals content is brought to you by KC Strength and Conditioning. Experts in baseball and softball training for kids ages 8 to 18. If you're in need, you're in luck. John and his crew have sent hundreds of players to college and the pros. That's KC Strength and Conditioning. And now, it's time for the latest updates on your Kansas City Royals.
What's up, y'all? This is One Royal Way here on Kansas City Sports Network. I'm Joel Penfield, Josh Kaiser, and Jordan Foote joining me as always. This is going to be a shorter episode tonight. I do not have my glasses, and I've been staring at screens for about the last 10 hours. My son broke them, so I'm flying basically half-blind doing this. Jordan's got a, can barely talk. Josh can barely talk, but we're going to fight through this for you guys because not only do we love the Royals, we love that you guys actually listen to the show talking about a team that at this point is 3 weeks below 500, and we're not even to Memorial Day. So really appreciate that. We really appreciate KCSC, Kansas City Strength and Conditioning, for sponsoring this show. Be sure to check them out if you have a baseball or softball player in the area that needs a place to train. Day one sponsor here at KCSN. We can't thank them enough. Be sure to hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, all the good stuff on all platforms. Really appreciate it. Helps the channel grow, helps KCSN grow, helps other people find this show. The biggest news of the day, and I will let Jordan and Josh kind of take the lead on this because I've been rambling for the last minute and a half. The biggest news that happened yesterday, I was not expecting it to actually happen, at least not yet. It was an inevitable thing. But Hunter Dozier was designated for assignment by the Royals on Monday when Nicky Lopez came off the injured list. It was going to happen. It was just a matter of when. He, at this point, was slashing .183, .253, .305, 50 weighted runs created plus, and 91 plate appearances. He's been a negative WAR player since 2020. It just ran its course. And they gave him the contract, but I at least appreciate the fact that they were willing to just go, you know what, enough's enough. Like, we can't do this anymore. I know the fans have been clamoring for it for a long time, but they could have let this string out longer. They let it go. And I think it's just the way to go.
Yeah, it kind of started getting a little fuzzy. It looked like around the league was about the time when all the underperforming veterans that were still on teams were starting to get DFA'd. So it was kind of like where there's smoke, there's fire. And you see it from other orgs, you kind of wonder, like, okay, so now we can start kind of measuring it where the Royals and J.J. Piccolo is compared to other teams that are undeniably better than the Royals right now as far as standing and record goes. But where they are as far as, like, when they're ready to pull the trigger on guys. And Hunter Dozier is a little bit different situation, but the fact that he's still owed, like, $17 million between this year and next year, it kind of puts a little bit of a different variable on those other guys that are just, like, on minor league contracts with spring training invites and break the camp with them. So it was very interesting to see the timing of it. I think everybody kind of saw the people predicting it was going to be at the beginning of May. Well, no, now it's like the middle of May. No, actually, it's going to be like the beginning of June. It's like, it was kind of interesting to see it actually happen at this point. So problems are solved, right? The Royals are undefeated since Hunter Dozier's on this team. Am I right?
Well, I lost yesterday, so no.
Oh, that's weird. Okay. So it wasn't just a big problem there.
Well, yeah. To be fair, the Royals were 5-20 in games in which he started. Is that entirely Hunter Dozier's fault? No. But does having his dead weight in the lineup help either? No.
No. Yeah, it's... The Royals, you're still on the hook for quite a bit. Like Josh said, like they owe him about $5 million the rest of the year. They owe him $9.25 million for 2024. And they owe him a $1 million buyout for 2025. This was not, hey, Jackie Bradley Jr., you're making $2 million bucks or whatever he's making, you know, 5 cents. We're going to cut ties with you. Go ahead and let's move on. You've served your purpose on this team. This was, hey, we're at a spot where there aren't a ton of guys really at third base within the organizational depth chart that are ready to go every day. You're also, you've been a big part of the team in terms of leadership over the past few years. We drafted you, we home grew you, all that stuff. The 2021 injury excuse, sure, valid, whatever. Last year in the second half, his weighted runs created plus was under 50. He was worse than he is right now for this. So the Royals, it was time. I think it differentiates J.J. Piccolo from Dayton Moore. I think this decision comes a lot later, if not during the offseason, if maybe not at all, if Dayton Moore is still in charge. Hunter Dozier is going to make some bank because he's going to clear waivers. I think the team's not going to be able to find a trade partner in the next 5 days. But it was time, and it marks the end of, just got to be honest, it was an underwhelming era of Hunter Dozier baseball in Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the revisionist history of the contract. Like, I totally understand it. But after 2019 and 2020, it was like, okay, 4 for $23 million, cool. Like, I think that it's perfectly reasonable. You think maybe he's not going to be a stellar player, but at least he helps hold down a position. He's going to be a part of the lineup. He's going to help lead into the future. And it just never came to fruition. It wasn't even close. He was just never that player. 2019 is really just kind of an aberration in his career. A, he was never able to stay healthy, and when he was healthy, he wasn't productive outside of that season. And even in that season, he was worth 2.8 WAR because the defense drug him down. But he's still going to be, you know, he's 31. Someone will pick him up and say, hey, come play ball for us. Like the A's. What do the A's have to lose during Hunter Dozier out there pretty much every day? Like, you want to find a team that's worse than the Royals? They're the Oakland A's. Yes, they're worse.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wasn't real sure. I knew
they're still bad. They're still bad.
Sure.
But someone will find, you know, he's going to find work. I don't think this is the end of the career of Hunter Dozier. If it is, then God bless him. And I know he'll go and find a career doing something else and probably make a lot of money doing it. It is what it is at this point. We can't change the past. They gave him the contract, but credit to John Sherman and JJ for going, okay, we're going to bite the bullet on this, because I don't think previous ownership and I don't think previous management, to Jordan's point, would have made that decision. It's just not a decision the Royals would have made in the past, I don't think.
And they have to be right that he is washed. Now, every indicator says that he is. Last season and a half, he's been really, like Joel said, negative in the lineup at this point. But they better get this right, because they're still paying him $17 million. This is not a Ryan O'Hearn, Brent Rooker situation. This is, we're going to go pay him $17 million to not play here. Despite us, like Jordan said, not a lot of depth. There is a little bit of a youth thing going on, a little bit of a jammed infield going on, but they cannot afford to be wrong on this one. So it's going to be very interesting to kind of keep an eye on this situation, all things considered. But I think kind of speaking to that, this doesn't solve any issues outside of getting the youth, getting like Michael Garcia more reps. This doesn't, I mean, you're going to see Nicky Lopez and his 614 OPS going up there and playing third base, probably playing pretty good defensively, but adding just as much, which is not much, as Hunter Dozier was adding to this lineup. And that's not going to be fun to watch for a while. So not that you're going to miss Hunter Dozier, but you're also going to have to watch Nicky Lopez from the hot corner where runs are supposed to be generated, batting or DHing for that matter, in his stead. So I'm going to be interested in seeing how that moves forward.
I'd be shocked if the long-term decision, at least for this season, is to have Nicky Lopez playing third base every day or close to it.
I think it should be Garcia most of the time, but
it should be Garcia most of the time. Like
see Nicky Lopez.
That needs to be
rotation.
Yes, like that needs to be the plan. Michael Garcia needs to be playing third base almost every day.
Yeah, I do. I think there was also, and part of this is just rumblings that I'm not like sourcing anything per se, but like rumblings I'd heard, and also just widely, I think Rosenthal reported it during the offseason. Very small similarities to like the Carlos Santana situation where, okay, we're going to trot you out there. We're going to hope that you can up your value and show that you're worth something, then potentially ship you off if we can trick your team into thinking that you're worth some sort of trade compensation. The contract situation with Dozier, I think, made it a lot trickier because it wasn't just 2023. It wasn't just necessarily a cheap 2024. That team would really have to be convinced that he was good. Or flip side, it convinces the Royals to keep him for that contract. Like they needed a definitive answer one way or another, whether it be for them or for another team. Once it became really apparent that he wasn't going to be of service to another team via trade or of service to them via just being in the lineup and paying him. This is growth from the Royals, I think, being willing to eat that money addition by subtraction. Like we're not trying to bash the player or the person, let alone that. But I mean, that's just calling a spade at this point.
Looking at some of the roster moves that were made, trying to move a little quicker here. I mentioned Nicky Lopez. He was the corresponding move with Dozier being DFA'd. He's back after having appendicitis and having emergency surgery. So glad that he's all right and back after a couple of weeks. Brad Keller hits the injured list with a right shoulder impingement, I believe is what it was. Never liked to see anything like that. It's not as bad as seeing like a flexor strain or a forearm strain. Still not good. Makes sense why he has been like incredibly erratic, more than normal. I would imagine this is a real injury and not a, hey, we're just going to stash you on the injured list for a little bit just to get you out of the rotation for a couple weeks and let you reset. I'll be curious how long he's actually out beyond the 10-day injured list spot. Daniel Lynch, I bet, is back this weekend. Looked great in Omaha today on his rehab start, 6 innings, which is the max the Royals let any of their minor league guys go. 5 strikeouts, no walks, which was really key for him. Couple hits, no runs. Good for me. Like that's perfect. If you can get anything close to that from Daniel Lynch at this point, I just want to see him healthy. I just want to see him out there every fifth day. I just hope that some of those results follow. And some of the stuff was pretty intriguing. The slider looked a little sharper. Fastball had a little more life to it. So maybe he's figured some things out in the rehab as well. Drew Waters just absolutely killing it in Omaha right now. He's about ready to come off the injured list and join the Royals on his rehab assignment so far in Omaha. Batting 273 with a 924 OPS. I think he's got multi-hit games in 3 or 4 straight, 4 for 5 today. Really hitting his stride, and hopefully he can carry some of that momentum into the Royals lineup here very soon. I bet he's up after this Detroit series, and we'll see him this weekend against the Nationals. There becomes another roster thing, like bringing Daniel Lynch and bringing Drew Waters up. What's the move? Is this probably, I'd imagine, if I had to take a guess, it's Drew Waters up, Nate Eaton down. They keep JBJ as a fourth outfielder, and the playing time comes back down for him a little bit. Daniel Lynch, what do you guys think might be the move there? Because they've been, I-29 has been getting a friggin' workout with these bullpen arms. And a lot of it is due to injuries at other places, but it's certainly going to move. Nick Whitgren coming up from Omaha today.
Yeah.
Max Castillo got shipped back up.
I'm going to stall for Josh just in case he doesn't have one, because I know I don't. Drew Waters, so I only have thoughts on really two of them. I know that Q said Keller like started a throwing progression on Monday, so like he should theoretically be back after that IL stint. I'm going to call it what it is, even if we have some thoughts beforehand about it being just, you know, resetting or whatever. Lopez, not a lot there. Drew Waters, though, after, and this is from Jake Eisenberg, like I'm literally quoting his entire tweet, after beginning his rehab assignment 1 for 22, Waters is now 15 for 26, which is a 577 batting average.
But
four doubles. Yes. Four doubles, two triples, two home runs in his last six games, including today. That was tweeted when he was 4 for 5 on Tuesday. So Drew Waters is going to be back big time. I think that I'm almost as high on him as a lot of people that are proponents of him. And usually I don't drink the Kool-Aid on players, but I'm just slamming the pitcher on him, I think. And then Daniel Lynch, he looked good. Actually got to catch some clips of it. I didn't get to watch his start live. I believe it was Preston Farr that tweeted out he had 17 whiffs as well during that start. So getting healthy is always a good thing. The Royals need it because on a team that's 21 games below 500 as of the recording of this podcast, you need all the extra help on the margins that that you can get, because if you don't get it, you're going to keep losing some games.
Yeah, the two things. So I think the Eaton getting option is probably the way to go. Joel, you kind of mentioned it. I think JBJ, it makes sense just to have him on as a defensive substitution or a fourth or fifth outfielder type thing. So I think that's a pretty that's the pretty obvious choice to me. I think that gets kind of more interesting depending on how injuries kind of fall back when Isbell starts to come back in mid to late June. That's when the real crunch is going to start coming in. That's when you could really start to see like a JBJ, DFA, maybe an Oliveras, depending on where he is at that time. Maybe he can get, I don't know if he's got options left, but you can
I doubt it, considering how many times he was doing a couple years
ago. Well, that only counted for one option, so let's see. He's still got an option left. He's still got an option left, according to Fangraphs.
He's still hitting enough that I think they keep him up. That could be the end of JBJ.
He kind of is, but it would make sense. The bigger thing there should probably be JBJ, I think. I think that's right. That's the kind of next roster crunch move for me. As far as adding Lynch to the scenario, he's on the 15-day IL, so you don't even have to make a 40-man move to kind of incorporate him back. I think at that point, you're probably looking at Kwas, Whitgren, or Josh Taylor probably on the chopping block at that point, depending on how everybody's doing. So I think that's a fairly easy choice as well, because you have to have a fifth starter. You have to have Daniel Lynch up here for the assessment. And speaking of, I know you guys said they had 17 whiffs. He only had 61 pitches today. That is a 45% whiff rate. That's crazy down. That's the most efficient he has been in a long damn time. Very I don't know. Time. That's a long time.
Honestly,
you almost used the
Bloomington.
Yeah. The
just almost used the E word.
E word. Yeah.
Almost. I'm not going to do that, but it kind of came because, Joel, you kind of mentioned it. He looked sharper, but specifically his slider and his knuckle curve both had 5 to 6 extra inches of horizontal break than he normally has. He had a lot more spin. It's like 200 RPMs more on his slider in today's start than he usually does. That is very intriguing, because if he can reincorporate that and generate that much efficient whiff in the minors, that's very promising for what he can potentially bring to this rotation when he comes back and healthy, which again I think is pretty darn close to being happening. So I'm excited to see, and I'm not gonna lie, from what I was seeing of Daniel Lynch and his rehab starts, I was not that excited to bring him back in the rotation until the last couple starts. It's been very, very intriguing to at least get him back up here and see what he can bring.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Make sure you download our new app. Find it on the App Store or Google Play. Just search KC Sports Network.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
So one of the big things that Royals Twitter and fans and other podcasts have been talking about quite a bit over the last couple of weeks has been Bobby Witt Jr. and why the heck is he still leading off? Now, I know there are a lot of, there are people kind of on both sides of the fence. And there's no denying that he's in a slump right now. It happens to all players. Like, let's not throw up too many red flags about that. It happens. But it was also, it was the slump on top of him absolutely struggling in the leadoff spot.
Yeah.
I think at the time of the tweet, he was hitting like 206 over his last month or so, all pretty much exclusively in the leadoff spot. A lot of, I cracked the joke last week, but it looked like Alcides Escobar type leadoff at bats where it was hack, 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 hack. And unless you're George Springer, unless you're Kyle Schwarber every once in a while, and you can just pop one because you can, like, it just doesn't work that way. And those guys still work counts. Bobby Witt Jr. is a very aggressive young hitter that really wants to, A, he wants to hit his way out of a slump, and B, he wants to do damage. Nothing wrong with that. That just doesn't correlate with being a leadoff hitter for the most part if you want to be inclined to have a guy that will work a count, really, you know, make the pitcher work early on, see a lot of pitches, and find a way on base, making contact any way possible. That's just not who Bobby Witt Jr. is, and that's okay. Like, he could be the leadoff hitter long term. I think there is a world where that still exists. Right now, I think they just need to make sure that he is confident as he possibly can be at the plate. And right now, that did not look to be the case. I know they talk about wanting to have him there because that's where he's going to be long term, and they don't want to clog up the bases for him so he can get the most plate appearances. I get all of that. But at a certain point, this is a results-based business, and you still have to have results in there. Like, yeah, you have to see good at-bats. Too often we weren't, and it was just, it doesn't start off the game in a good tone, if you want to put it that way. Like, seeing your leadoff hitter flail at the first pitch and pop it up to the first baseman, or flail at a slider away just because he's trying to do too much. And I think that's what it is right now. And it's nothing to be concerned about, I don't think. The Mariners did the exact same thing with Julio Rodriguez, who's actually struggling worse than Bobby right now. I think he had a three-hit night last night. Before that, he was in the middle of like a 3-for-35 or something like that. And they moved him out of the leadoff spot, moved him down to 5 or 6, popped him back up to the 3 spot, and he's starting to figure it out again. So it can be done. I think this is just the right scenario for the Royals as it sits right now, just to make sure that Bobby is going to still be able to produce.
And I think the organization, they were talking about Cody and Gold, was basically like, we think he's going to be at the top of the order bat. We want him to get the most plate appearances that he possibly can. And that's, to me, I see that rationale. I understand it. I was talking last night, I was talking to our buddy Alex DeFall from Royals Farm Report pretty extensively about why it doesn't matter. And his point was more about process. He wants to see the guys that they think are going to fit a certain type of player in the lineup. Be there and kind of stay there so they can kind of be comfortable with what is expected of them in that role. We've talked about Michael Garcia kind of being that prototypical leadoff guy. I get it. He's got a great approach. He's got great contact skills. Obviously got the speed as well. So I'm good with that. Right now, he has not shown that he can be that guy consistently. He has been just slightly better than Bobby over that same month span since his call-up. I think he's going to be good, also not panicking on him, but I don't necessarily think we actually have to throw him into the leadoff spot. The most important thing this year from now on is assessment, fixing, and tweaking stuff as it goes. And the most reps is going to give you the most opportunity to tweak and fix those things, get Bobby Witt Jr. comfortable at the plate. That's the most important thing. He is the most important player on this team for the next decade. If Bobby Witt Jr. cannot get right, then this is going to be awful. This isn't going to be very bad. I don't think it matters where he is in the lineup at this point. I understand why everybody was upset about it, but at this point in the season, it does not matter what he brings to this lineup as long as he's starting to figure out how to have major league approaches. That's it. To me, that is the only argument to be made. I don't care where he's in the lineup. Just figure it out.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I kind of jive with that in that maybe there's a little bit less pressure to where if he's not starting off a game or he has a little bit better hitters in front of him. But the flip side of that, with runners on base, he has a 46 weighted runs created plus this year. With runners in scoring position, it's 63. Like, this team is bad, and I'm not in his mind, but it's just natural for a player with the God-given ability plus the skill set to want to press and make stuff happen.
Yep. Yep.
Strikeout rates in those situations is nearly 30%. And it's been a tale of two seasons in this lopsided comparison, but the first 15 games, and I remember we centered a podcast around this almost. He was slashing 298, 344, 474. He was walking almost 7% of the time. He was striking out 16% of the time. He looked like he had taken the leap. Since then, his last 33 games, 190, 228, 373, walking under 5% of the time again, striking out 24% of the time, which is higher than expected, 57 weighted runs created plus. The swing rates are up. The whiff rates are up. Fastball still struggling immensely against those. I also noticed against sliders last year, he hit 308. Plus six run value. This year he's hitting 231 against sliders, 359 slugging percentage. Just a bunch of small things adding up to make an underwhelming sophomore season. So I think bumping him down could help a little bit. Is it going to be the thing that unlocks Bobby Witt Jr.? No, absolutely not. But can that be paired with, hey, maybe there's a little bit less pressure on you, let's also adjust this, that, and the other? I think that's plausible. So I do think there's some inherent value in moving him down from that leadoff spot. He was hitting 207 with a 72 weighted runs created plus in 41 games doing that. Last year, did it four times. Results were bad. So he can't be, it's not like he's doomed forever being the Royals leadoff hitter, but until he displays more of a well-rounded approach and becomes the guy that the fans expect him to be, the media, everyone expects him to be,
the dude that he will be. Like, I'll just straight up, I'll say that. Like,
yep.
It's one of those things where I think fans, like, over the last 5 years, and this is more just an overarching just player,
sure,
player thing.
Yeah.
But over the last like 5-6 years, we've seen Acuna, Tatis, Soto, Julio Rodriguez, Adley Rutschman come up and just light the world on fire immediately. And so fans get these guys, you know, we have these guys like, just in the last couple years, Corbin Carroll, Bobby Witt Jr., Spencer Strider, Michael Harris II, that come up, and if it doesn't happen right away, fans are freaking out that, is this guy a bust? What's happening here? Success is not linear. Like, this thing does not happen for everybody immediately. Like, Jared Kelnick for the Mariners had legitimately the worst start to a career for any player that got, like, I think 200 plate appearances.
Yeah.
Over his first two seasons, he hit up like a buck 60 and was worth negative 0.5 war. Year three, bam, it clicked. Like, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not something that is going to happen immediately for every guy. And for right now, it's taking Bobby a little longer than we thought. I thought he'd come up and be one of those guys and light the world on fire. And he still had a good year last year. He was worth 2.3 war. Like, it's not like it was completely underwhelming. Julio lit the world on fire. So did Michael Harris II, so did Adley. He just was in a stacked rookie class. He's still a great player. This is not an indictment on him. It is just, this is not the best situation for him to succeed right now. And the Royals need to find a way to put him in that position so that he can be the player we all know that he can be. That's all this is. This is not me trying to crush the kid. Because he's still 22 years old, by the way. He's 22. Let's calm the hell down, people. Seriously.
Joel, did you just call him Chris Getz with better speed and a little more pop.
And that's going to do it for the One Royal Way podcast.
Speaking of Chris Getz, he has more F4 than Hunter Dozier.
Oh, man.
I believe that, though. Like, I actually do believe that.
I was very surprised.
It's ridiculous. Are we going to talk Carlos Hernandez? Oh, sorry, yeah, sorry.
Before we move the conversation away from Bobby, I do want to say one of the biggest things that people hammered him for last year was his defense.
Oh, and he's been so much better.
He is the sixth best defender in baseball on Baseball Savant via outs above average, which I like a little better than defensive versus save. It's a little more concrete. Still fairly subjective because there's so much ground to cover, but it's a really good thing to see. Like, he's up there with Javier Baez, Wander Franco, like some of the best, and Xander Bogaerts of all people, which just surprised me. Which, those are the top defensive shortstops in baseball. That's what Bobby has become. And that's every scouting report that we saw from him in the minors was he's a Gold Glove shortstop, which is why I wasn't worried about that last year. Like, it's a rookie learning curve. He's going to be fine. And ultimately, he is. And I know people wanted to just ship him off a shortstop and never let him see it again, proving a lot of people wrong there.
Well, and the convo was like, it's shifting from, can he just be an average shortstop and a great hitter, to can he be an above average shortstop and an above average hitter? And then if you, because a lot of players don't have that, and like, that pushes you into that fringe all-star category, where if he settles into that, I think a lot of people would be disappointed, but the Royals would have a really good player on their hands. And I don't think that he's going to be limited to that. Now, if he settles into it, that's a different story, but the ceiling there, everyone can see it. He can still be one of the best players in baseball. He can still be clearly the best player on the Royals for a long time. The defensive improvements, like, I'm not too concerned right now. I did Radio Tuesday. I think I said I was at a 5, which like might have been a little bit too high, but it's still a little bit early. Again, though, he's getting close to that 1,000 plate appearance mark. Like, he's also going to start settling into some habits without our producer Nick is being a jackass in the chat. But that's my thoughts on Bobby Jr. He's probably going to be fine, and the defense is a really big plus for him while he's struggling at the plate.
5 on the panic meter. They're never going to bring you back on radio again. It's either a 1 or a 9 on radio, man.
They call me the fence sitter for a reason, buddy.
Yeah.
When I do radio, in case you guys didn't hear, I do radio sometimes. That was Nick's comment. He said, we get it, you do radio. I'm just all about context here. So
Jordan Foote, Captain Lukewarm.
Oh, man.
Captain Room Temperature. If you were fence a degrees, you would be 72.
Sitter foot.
I'm getting absolutely shredded by our new producer.
Oh, man. All right, let's have some fun, and let's talk about one of the better developments I think we've seen over the last week, which is Carlos Hernandez as an opener. He got that opportunity against San Diego Padres last week. It was the Wednesday day game, bullpen game. They had just come off a wild win the night before. I'm like, okay, hey, we'll see how this goes. Maybe they can find a way. They did find a way. And Carlos Hernandez had 4 punchies in 2 innings, only gave up a couple of hits. And a lot of people were like, whoa, where did this Carlos Hernandez come from? It was some of the best, like most refined he has looked to this point in his career. Follows that up with another opener outing against the White Sox over the weekend, and goes 2 innings, 3 strikeouts, no hits, 2 clean innings. They may have found a role for him other than just low leverage 7th inning or mop-up duty in the back end. I don't want to say that they found their, like, Ryan Stanek equivalent, which is the guy that really made the opener a thing for the Rays, but I think they found someone that can do that role and make it a prominent part of the pitching staff at this point. It's just 2 outings, so I still want to see it a few more times, but the 2 outings have been the best I've ever seen Carlos Hernandez. Better than his little run, the 6-week run of starts he had in 21 that were okay, pretty good. He's been legitimately very impressive in those outings, and I hope to see him do it again soon.
I think the big move is just him moving to the bullpen. He's allowing his stuff to actually play up. All of his velo is up because he's actually able to like throw at 100%, and his movement, his breaking is actually down as far as like how much it's moving. So I think that he's able to get that velo up, which is allowing him to control his braking a lot easier. His walks were up they're down 3%. They're 3% better than they were last season, and he's still getting whiffs. He's getting a 31.9% whiff rate this year, which is like, I think, the 87th percentile in pitching, according to StatCast. So they found something in both letting his stuff play up and then allowing that to, like, not get away from him because his breaking stuff is just moving way too much. So I think they actually found something there. I think in theory, even if you don't want him to be Ryan Stanek as an opener, in theory, the opener is pitching to the top of the order more. You know, they should have that stuff that is still comfortable to be able to be applied to the back of the pins.
Yes, and Stanek can still do that too.
Correct, yeah. And that is, in theory, being closer and a late inning reliever is a mentality requirement as well. We don't know if Carlos can do that yet, but we're going to eventually deal Roldis Chapman. We're eventually going to deal Scott Barlow. Then it's going to leave you with Josh Staumont, Carlos Hernandez, and who else to kind of anchor the
maybe
back.
Dylan Coleman.
Maybe Dylan. He's been really good. That slider was really good down there. But there's going to be opportunities for him to show what he can do in the back of that bullpen very, very soon. And I'm very intrigued by his just move to the bullpen in general.
Yeah, he's struck out 7. He hasn't walked anybody. He hasn't got barreled once. Mm-hmm. 43 strikes out of his 60 pitches. He's using the fastball, and this is just in the 2 outings compared to his season average, 62% of the time compared to 54% on the year. He's cut the curveball usage in half. And that's just interesting, and that's going to change somewhat over the next few if he keeps doing that. But it's interesting to see, and I don't have much more other than what you guys have already hit on, but if this is a role that, again, baseball is a lot mental. And physically, he's been able to do some stuff. And even when he first came up, people said, okay, this guy's got the build of a workhorse guy. And then quickly, they found out, okay, well, he's not. But he has the stuff and just the sheer velocity. And if he can control it to be a useful bullpen piece in different settings. And if this is really what his setting is, maybe there is value in that. Or maybe, you know, God forbid, if you're the Royals, a team does come calling along and says, hey, we like what Carlos Hernandez can do. And that's kind of the opposite of what you want to do, building a bullpen when you need pitching help, but it's more the rotation. But the point stands, the value is going to build if he can keep this up. So definitely better than he was as a starter once, you know, he got past, I don't want to call it the Mickey Mouse run, but you know what I mean? The rookie success.
Nice stretch.
But yeah, he's pitching well, and I'm interested. I'm definitely watching. And before the year, I did not think I'd be keeping track on May 23rd.
Yeah, the fastball usage, you mentioned it. I need to find the actual number here, but he's throwing it 52% of the time. Curveball was 22%, and now it's down to 9.7%. Yeah. Like, there is a certain amount of it where I think it's a reliever mentality of, look, I throw 101 miles an hour. Here it is. I'm going to throw right down the chute. Good luck. Mm. And he's getting swings and misses, and he's getting, you know, pop-up out. He's getting weak contact outs out of it. Like, I love that sort of, like, I throw hard, F you reliever mentality. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be, yes, and it seems to be working for him. I'm curious how much longer they keep doing the opener thing, but with how much shifting they're doing with the pitcher, or like with the pitching staff right now due to either injury or just keeping arms fresh. I'd imagine this is a staple in the rotation. Like, it's essentially a 4-man rotation with a bullpen day kind of, which is what the Rays did early on until they could kind of figure out their rotation. So, by the way, similar pitchers to Carlos Hernandez based on velocity and movement was 2021 Drew Rasmussen, who was disgusting for the Tampa Bay Rays last year before he blew his arm out this year. Well, I have some comments off air that I will maybe talk about at some point on.
Coward, put that evil, that elbow explosion.
No. I'll tell you guys off air. All right, okay. We're going to take a short break, talk about some minor league guys. I did not mean to end that on a sour note. I was just making a comment. We're going to take a break, talk about the minor league guys, be right back.
You're listening to KC Sports Network. We'll be right back after this.
We'll be right back. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Hey, two big promotions happened this week on the minor league side. Two moves that we were expecting, as if you've listened to the show over the last couple of weeks. Noah Cameron moved up to Double A Northwest Arkansas from Quad Cities, and to fill, and then he filled the spot of Anthony Veneziano, who just goes up to Omaha AAA. Both have been fantastic this year. Veneziano is a major testament to, I think, the player development and just getting right after kind of a funky year last year from him. Noah Cameron was great before he got hurt last year, comes back and doesn't miss a beat. I expect both to be a major factors in their new teams. Veneziano's obviously one step closer to the show. If he keeps doing what he was doing in Northwest Arkansas, if there's a DFA or a roster move that allows it, I would not be shocked to see him at least make a debut in the bullpen at some point, maybe by July or August. I would love to see that, because I think he has a real future. Just tall, lanky, lefty, funky delivery, throws hard. Like, it's just he checks a lot of boxes. We don't know who is going to fill the spot that Noah Cameron left in Quad Cities. We haven't heard any roster move there yet. I don't want to speculate on anything because I don't have any info. I hope maybe we see Mazzucato up there soon. I think he's not long for Quad Cities, I would imagine. Another guy had a great week, and not someone we've talked about a ton because, well, I'll just be honest, he's been bad and was not expecting him to be bad based on his first little cup of coffee in pro ball last year. But Gavin Cross, 5 home runs this week, hit 4 games in a row, 5 and 6 days, bumped all of his stats up. A good week early in the year really helps the stats, but still the overall numbers are pretty underwhelming. Slashing .212, .299, .452, weighted runs created plus of .109. It was around 85 before this past week. So power, a little bit of a power surge. He's not walking the way that I thought he would. He's striking out a hell of a lot more than I thought he would. But maybe, hopefully this week gets it right for him, because I think the talent is immense there. I did like the pick that the Royals made with him. It just hasn't clicked early on. Hopefully that a 5-homer week will do some good for him and give him some good dig me session film to go back to and go from there.
Yeah. Josh, what do you have?
I think he just kind of add on. He also had 4 doubles and 2 stolen bases in that hot week. And he walked 7 times in this last week. One was an intentional walk. Also struck out 10 times. But, I mean, that is an approach, ladies and gentlemen. He's seeing pitches. When he sees the pitch he wants to hit, he absolutely crushes it. which is exactly what you want to see from Gavin Cross. I'd like to see the swinging strike rate is 16.2, line drives where it is a 16.3. I'd like to see those a little bit further apart, if you will. Sure. So I think he's got some time to grow, but considering how slow we got off to a very slow start, it's good to see him really, really heating up.
Yeah, no, 100%. And then with Veneziano and Cameron, Veneziano just needed a bump in comp. Like, he wasn't allowing any walks. He was striking out a shit ton of guys. Like, he was just ready for it. Then Cameron, he was also striking out a shit ton of guys. Mm-hmm. And his fly balls allowed were down from 43% to 31%. He was just pitching really well, limiting walks for the most part. So those guys, Mazzucato, the season ERA is down to 204. 55 strikeouts to 21 walks. That's a 2.6 ratio. I think I actually did that math in my head, so I could
nailed it. Yeah.
Oh, did I? Oh, let's go.
Is that
six innings pitched, two walks, seven strikeouts on the 18th. That was his most recent start. There's also Cross, obviously, is awesome. Did we touch on Carter Jensen and Steven Cruz, or did I jump the gun?
You jumped the gun, but we can go there. Carter Jensen, let me read off this stat line, because it is absolutely nuts. Carter Jensen to this point hitting .175 with a .403 on base percentage.
It's ridiculous.
Only a .298 slug, a weighted runs created plus of .119, three home runs, 11 RBIs, and 159 plate appearances in Quad Cities. He's striking out 23% of the time, which for him, perfectly manageable. It's a great number to be at. He is walking 28% of the time. He leads all of minor league baseball in walks as a 19-year-old in high A.
Mm-hmm.
The box score numbers are not pretty. Like, when you see the batting average, it's like, what the heck? Why are we talking about this? The fact that that kid has that elite of an approach and that an elite knowledge of the zone is incredibly impressive, which means when he figures out and really starts to like find those pitches to do damage on, look the out, because he's going to start going nuts. And we saw him do that at the end of the year. He wasn't doing it to this degree, but a very similar way that he was going about his business in Columbia, of being really selective, really trying to find his pitch. And sometimes he just didn't do damage on it. But when he started to really get in a groove down the stretch in Columbia, he was hammering baseballs. I think he put a ball in the Mississippi River a couple of weeks ago for there in Quad Cities.
Yep.
I think, and he talked about, there was an interview that he did with MLB.com and said, I'm being selective, but I need to be more aggressive in the strike zone and going after pitches and trying to do more damage. Well, buddy, when he figures that out, I think the Royals got a really, really good hitter on their hands.
Still just an 8.4% swinging strike rate, and an 18.2% line drive. Yeah, that's crazy for anybody, for any player at any level. That is a really, really low average or low rate. And the fact that he is, according to BREF, 3.5 years younger than the average age there at high A. So if he's doing that with that, he has that elite eye at that age, at that level. If he hits .225 at some point, he's going to absolutely start breaking 100, your top 100 list for sure. We could really, really start to get excited about Carter Jensen, I think.
Your batting average and your weighted runs created plus should not be allowed to both be in the hundreds. Like, that does not equate. And like, I'm not a huge batting average guy for obvious reasons, but that should not be. He's striking out 23% of the time. That's not a crazy high number.
Mm-hmm.
He had a 17% walk rate in A ball last year. 44 walks in 36 games is ridiculous. Like, I don't care what level you're at. I don't care if you're playing MLB The Show. I don't care if you're playing Coach Pitch, or I don't care what you're doing. You know, it's just absolutely ridiculous. Whatever age group, whatever level, whatever comp, it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
One more guy to hit on. We had Frank Mazzucato in the rundown. We've talked about him a ton. 2.04 ERA in low A. Get him out of there. Get him up to Quad Cities. Let's see what happens. Another guy, he was part of the Michael A. Taylor trade. We haven't talked about him at all. But Steven Cruz, who is in AA, 24 years old. He's 6'7", 225, throws 100. I mean, it was a hell of a lottery ticket that J.J. Piccolo got in that trade for Michael A. Taylor. 18 strikeouts in 15 and a third. 1.76 ERA, 3 saves. Now the FIP is 4.11. So that is not great. Like that, I don't like seeing that as much. He's walked 9 batters in those 15 and a third, but it is good to see that at least the results on the surface are at least good. And maybe after a couple outings, get him a bump to AAA and just sink or swim and see if you really have something. Because if he figures it out, I mean, that's a hell of a dude to have in the bullpen. And 102 is a hell of a lottery ticket to have.
Hasn't given up a run in a month in 8 appearances. So that's fun to see. Just 8 2/3 of an inning is pitched in that. But he's not striking out guys as much as I wanted to. Just 21.9% K rate right now. Still walking guys a lot. And even still, just a 0.92 whip. So that's still a very impressive, that's like Carter Jensen type of imbalance between those two things, walking dudes, but still not getting hit very well. So I'm excited to see what Cruz, the deal from that Matt went to Minnesota. I like Evan Sisk too, the other guy in that trade.
Yes.
So I think, I mean, they might be lottery tickets. They might just be relievers in the long term, but I like both of those guys and what they could potentially bring. So I was very high on both those dudes. It's good to see at least Steven Cruz, the big beefy man himself, doing well in Double A. You'll see him in Triple A soon.
So the walks and strikeouts are pretty consistent, right, with last year's numbers. And he's only allowed one home run. His line drive rate is down from 29.9% last year to 12.5% this year.
Mm-hmm.
The ground ball rate, up from 35.4 to 56.3. Opponents are pulling the ball a lot against him, from 37% to 59. Like, just a lot of really, really, really weird results for him so far. And like the disparity between the ERA and the FIP are weird, to say the least. Yeah, exactly. And I don't know what to make of him quite yet, but I think that was kind of the encapsulation, like that overall thought when the Royals acquired him. And the results, for whatever reason, one reason or another, have been good so far. So definitely went from, again, like I mentioned with Carlos Hernandez, not to sound like a broken record, but a guy that I didn't think I'd have on my radar at this point to a guy that now I am paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We said this was going to be 40 minutes or 47 minutes. I think for us, that's a pretty good spot, considering the way that we can just go and go. But thank you all so much for listening. Do you guys have any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I'm good.
I went to watch Fast X, and it was stellar. Go watch Fast and Furious 10, because you won't regret it.
Just because it's so ridiculous. Like, I feel like that's one of those 100%. Mindless movies. Yeah.
You can't go in.
They drive a tank to the moon or some crap like that.
Let's not get ridiculous. They did drive in space with the car. Not a big deal. Let's not get weird. Just enjoy it for what it is. It's mindless nonsense, but it's very self-aware. So just stick with it.
Yeah. So my final thought before we get out of here, I'm looking at obviously we've not been able to watch the game because we're recording, but while we've been recording, Bobby hit a 403-foot line out earlier in the game. Jeez. An 820 expected batting average, comes up, just says screw it, and lays down a bunt. Gets on, and then hits a 110-mile-an-hour single later in the game. So maybe we got a slump buster in there.
Telling me a bunt single is not leadoff material? Is that what we're saying?
Ambush. That's an ambush approach, buddy.
Slump busters.
I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it all the time. But if that's what it takes to get your confidence back up, then go for it.
Yep. That'll do it. I like that.
Yeah, that's good. And that's going to do it for One Royal Way this week. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Be sure to tune in next week. We have a really awesome episode coming up for you. We have an interview that is lined up that we're going to have this weekend, and it'll be a part of next week's episode. Be sure to like, subscribe, and turn on all your notifications so you don't miss that. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard and think others would as well. You can find all 6 of our channels at KCSN, covering the Chiefs, the Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou, by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.